Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 132, part 2. My name is John. I'm not going to write you a love song because you asked for it. Wonder Woman 1984 debuted on HBO Max at noon Eastern Time on Christmas Day. Within 15 minutes after it dropped, Gina and I settled down on the couch to watch it. Gina likes to find stopping points in movies and TV shows to stop to get snacks, take bathroom breaks, and on occasion, much to my chagrin, do the dishes. I talked her into watching it straight through. I made it pretty clear that I pretty much love all things DC Comics. If you listen to the first part of this podcast I released just before Christmas, you know I like Wonder Woman more than Superman or Batman. I really liked the first movie, even though I didn't like its take on Ares, and I hit play expecting to love the movie. As soon as the movie was over, Gina and I looked at each other and said the same thing. We each said, oh, by the way, I don't do spoiler-free anything on this podcast, ever. If you're listening to this and you haven't watched Wonder Woman 84, I'm going to spoil the fuck out of it for you. So go watch it first, or don't blame me. You've been warned. As soon as the movie was over, Gina and I looked at each other and said, huh. We both agreed it wasn't a bad movie, but we didn't love it, at least not anywhere near as much as the first movie. I thought about sitting down that evening and writing the podcast, but I couldn't. I knew I liked the movie, but I couldn't put my finger on why I didn't like it more. It wasn't because of the acting. Gal Gadot is still spot on as Wonder Woman. At this point, I can't imagine anyone else playing the part. Kristen Wiig was everything I thought she would be. First playing the wallflower, then the deft professional, then the burgeoning predator. I hope more people will realize how good this actress is. Chris Pine played a good fish out of water. Pedro Pascal was great as the often manic Maxwell Lord. Linda Carter as Asteria was a nice mid-credit reveal. I knew I recognized those blue eyes. I think there was a missed Easter egg opportunity for Simon Stagg to mention either his daughter Sapphire or her boyfriend Rex Mason. Could the obscure villain Duke of Deception that created the Dreamstone have ties to Darkseid as a way to connect to the rest of the cinematic universe? Since the movie is set in the 80s, a reference to Julia Capitellis or her daughter Vanessa would have been great since they were a couple of important supporting characters from that era in the comic books. Missed fan service, but not a big deal. I really liked the opening sequence with the skills race. I really wish there had been some mention before the race began that little Diana had to stay on her horse and or hit all the targets, because I thought she was using some clever improvisation to get back in it. When Antiope stops her just before she can finish and lectures her about not winning the right way, it felt like little Diana had been cheated. And I still don't know what it was that she did wrong. More on that shortly. I'm still not a fan of the Invisible Jet. But of all its incarnations in comics, live action, and animation, this is probably the best it's ever been portrayed. I do like the flying through fireworks sequence, even though it wasn't necessary to the plot. There were little things that I didn't care for, like changing Max's powers from mind control to basically genie. I thought it was really weird that Steve is eating a Pop-Tart in bed, waiting for Diana to wake up, It felt like an inside joke that belonged in a blooper reel. These things didn't really mess up the movie for me, though. I didn't like the fact that Steve Trevor comes back as basically a ghost inhabiting the body of another man. Then, at the end of the movie, when that man happens to run into Diana, she doesn't get his name or anything. I thought she was healing from her loss and ready to get on with her life. Then again, why bother having him inhabit another body to begin with? Why not just have Steve Trevor come back to life and appear on her doorstep? Why did she run out of Lasso when she was trying to save the children playing in the road? Yes, her powers were diminishing, but the lassos weren't. It extended pretty far in the mall sequence, looping around a couple of bad guys while she's swinging in the air. There's no reason to think the rope couldn't extend for her in this case. But one thing that did take me totally out of the movie is when she hits the ground after grabbing the children, it is painfully obvious she's got her arms wrapped around mannequins. If there's one thing that really irritated me, though, it was the fact that, and I timed this, the fully transformed Cheetah is on the screen for less than 5 minutes. The entire 5 minutes in nighttime lighting, so you never really see how she's supposed to look, and the vast majority of the time on screen, she's either far away or moving so fast you can't get a clear look at her. The best look you get is after the fight is over and her fur is soaking wet. The movie failed to give the fans a clear view in natural lighting. Then, a couple of days ago, it dawned on me why I didn't love the movie. And so I watched it again just to see if what I was feeling was right. The whole movie shows Max granting wishes to people, gaining more and more power, taking what he wants, and fucking up the world in the process. First, the movie submits the far-fetched, even for a comic book movie, notion that the millions, maybe even billions of people who made wishes all gave them back. Second, once everyone gives back their wishes, everything simply goes back to the way it was. I guess the stone regenerates since Max gave up his wish? I guess Simon Stagg knew he had been duped into providing a wish to Max and got control of his company back? I guess the woman who wished for the Irish to be rounded up and deported before she dropped dead somehow knew to give her wish back, even though they were still trying to revive her after Diana stopped transmitting? But what it all comes down to is nothing happened. Everything got reversed. All the crises were averted like they never existed in the first place. Launched missiles disintegrated. New missiles disappeared. The villains are gone. Max Lord seems to turn away from his greed completely. Cheetah, Wonder Woman's most famous villain, played brilliantly by an underrated actress, arguably the best character in the entire movie, doesn't exist anymore. And she doesn't die like Jack Nicholson's Joker or Michael Shannon's Zod. She just reverts back to what? The wallflower she was before she made her first wish? That's what she should be, based on what happened with everything else. Does she retain her anger and drive to be an apex predator? That wouldn't be consistent with someone who voluntarily gave back her wish. So the entire movie ends up being Diana has a brief, bittersweet reunion with Steve, and she learns how to fly, or to be more specific, ride the wind currents. Everything else just got wiped away. It felt empty. As I pointed out in part one of this podcast, there's also the mention in early reviews of a timely message. I don't know what they thought it was. I mean, 80s were a time of greed. That's hardly timely. I'm sure everybody's going to filter this movie through their own prism and interpret the message differently. But I'll bet they didn't intend for my interpretation. Let me start with the lesson presented in the opening. Little Diana is forcibly removed from the contest, as I mentioned just a few moments ago. Antiope pulls her aside and lectures her, saying, quote, "Nothing good is born from lies," end quote. Now, I know this was by no means their intention, but in a nation where tens of millions of people believe their president-elect won by using massive voter fraud, it probably wasn't the best time for that line. Besides, as I stated earlier, I didn't know the rules, and I thought little Diana was being very creative getting back into the contest. What kind of a message is it to say, as soon as one thing takes you out, give up? What is so damn wrong with looking for faster, perhaps better ways of achieving your goals? There seems to be a very clear anti-innovation message going on. If you take that idea out to its natural conclusion, it actually becomes a very unnerving pro-conservative message. Don't be different. Conform to our morality and rules, or you'll be punished if you try to stand out. The other timely message that I think is lost on the movie makers and most of the movie watchers is the whole notion of taking the easy way to achieve your goals. We have a president-elect and his political party promising that if you just put your faith and vote in them, they'll take care of all your concerns. Healthcare, education, housing, cradle to grave. Just like Max Lord in the movie, all you have to do is wish for it. You don't have to work for it, just wish. But there's a price you don't realize you're paying. First off, the guy you're placing your faith or vote in grows more and more powerful and has more and more control over you. Second, it takes its toll on the rest of the world because it is artificially changing things that go contrary to the way the natural world works. That's what I've been trying to explain for the past 11 years in this podcast, and Wonder Woman 1984 dropped a nice little allegory right in my lap. The modern day liberalism, socialism, communism that promises you everything if you just give in to it is the same trap as the Dreamstone. Believing in it, giving it your power, will destroy you and eventually destroy the world. So where does that put my feelings for this movie? I like it. I really do like it, but I don't love it. Pieces of it worked. The actors all did a great job. The action sequences were fun, pretty well choreographed, and did not get confusing as those kinds of sequences in those kind of movies often do. Hell, it even had a Bialya reference, which was a far deeper cut than Justice League ever gave us. But once the great pieces were put together, it just didn't seem to add up to what it was supposed to. Good, but not great. It reminded me of the majority of Marvel movies. Pretty, flashy, but a take-no-chances, run-of-the-mill comic book movie that does little more than slightly nudge the character's growth forward. I needed a much bigger Cheetah payoff. Hell, I needed a much bigger story payoff. But then again, the movie did preach that you shouldn't wish for more. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.